Jeff chose his subject and I chose mine. And his was David defeating his enemies and us defeating ours. Likewise, I'm going to look at David today, but at first not in victory, in defeat, but out of that will come victory. And in this lesson, I suppose we could title it, Would I Had Died. And many of you know the occasion on which that statement was made by David. This is going to be a lesson about profound love, amazing, sacrificial love, unique love. It's referred to in John the 15th chapter, verse 31, by Jesus in an aspect that is not completely unique, but we will see that his love is unique in that of David. He said, no greater love has any man than this, that a man shall give his life for his friends. That's a wonderful love. It's unselfish, but it's not unique. There are many who give their lives for others. I mean, this was from Reader's Digest about 30 or 40 years ago, maybe 80 or 90. But there was a little girl, she was a couple of years old, and she had some disease, and she just had to have blood. It was a rare type. The only one else they could find that had that type of blood was her brother, who was about 5 years old. You're going to give your blood to her if that is all right with you. And he said, that's okay with me. And so they gave the little girl the transfusion. The little boy is sitting there very quietly, very quietly. And then he said, Daddy, how long will it be? And he said, how long will it be to what? And he said, well, giving up my blood till I die. He had given his blood, he thought, and was going in his death to his little sister. So we find others, soldiers, we find people in our life who may give their life for a friend. But really, Jesus gave his life for all. In Hebrews verse 9, he tasted death for every man, every one of you here, everyone in this city, everyone in this state, everyone in this world, everyone who has ever lived. Jesus gave his life for them. In Colossians 1, verses 21 through 23, it speaks of us when we were enemies in our mind, yet he died for us, that we might be perfected and without blemish, we continue steadfast in the faith. So Jesus died not just for his friends. He died for his enemies. There's that passage we've noted several times recently before the Lord's Supper in Romans, the 5th chapter, verse 9. That God commends his love toward us and that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. So let's go back to John 5:31 and look at the next verse. It says, and you are my friends if you keep that which I have commanded you. So yes, Jesus died for everyone, but it is his friends who are going to benefit by that death. It is only his friends that are going to benefit. Are they who keep his word, who walk in his ways. And so there was Jesus dying for his friends, but willing to die for his enemies, willing to die for those who hated him. There was another who did that. And as you may guess from my opening remarks, that was David. You know, when I'm praying and I really want to express my love for God and say, Lord, I love you. I really want to express my admiration for his greatness and his majesty. I have sometimes said, Lord, I wish I had the facile tongue. Well, it's kind of facile, but it's not as poised as David's. I can write and I can use words. I used to use them. Sometimes I still can, but I don't have the poetry of David. I can love like David, I hope. I can pray. But how I would love to use all those wonderful expressions, beautiful expressions, passionate expressions, powerful expressions David did. But David was poet. He wrote of exaltation, depression, praise, supplication, victory, and defeat. He used emotive, figurative language that literally occurred in the life of Jesus Christ. I want to repeat that. In David's suffering, and in the things of David's life, that expressed so powerfully in poetry, in figurative language, some of the things that he mentions were not literal, they were figurative, but we get to Jesus Christ, you see those things in his life, and especially is that true in reference to the death that he died for our sins. You're familiar with the 22nd Psalm. And this is one such passage where he is in great distress and suffering, and he prays and he talks and he speaks. And yet, when we get to Matthew, the 27th chapter, you will read of these step by step by step by step taking place in the life of Jesus and his death, not only in what he said and what he did, but what his enemies did and what they said. They are here in the in this low time of David's life. Chapter 22, verse 1. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? You ever heard that before? What were those words said by Jesus on the cross? Jesus, I believe, was calling attention to this psalm because those who were there and knew this psalm, and they would have been many, could see how they had just fulfilled. They had just said the things that David had said they would say, or that he represents as being said to him in these figurative expressions of his suffering. We come down to verse 7. All they that see me laugh me to scorn. They shoot out the lip. They shake the head, saying, commit thyself unto Jehovah. Let him deliver him. Let him rescue him, seeing he delighteth in him. Who said that? The enemies of David. Who said that? The enemies of Christ at the cross. They said these words, not knowing. Come down to verse 11. Be not far from me, for trouble is near, for there is none to help me. Bulls have compassed me, strong bulls of Bashan have beset me round about. They gave me the mouth as a hedge of. And all my bones are out of joint, parts as it is melted within me. My strength is burning. My jaws into the dust. Dogs have compassed me, and a company of evildoers having claws, they pierced my hands and my. They had not physically done that to David. Emotionally, figuratively, they had done that to David. Literally did that to Jesus Christ, and it is in the 22nd Psalm. And when they have done that, Jesus looks out over that crowd, he gives up, and he says, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Remember the 22nd Psalm. You had just fulfilled it, he was saying to the mob there at the foot of the cross. I may count on my bones. They look and stare for me. They part my garments among them. And from my vesture do they count lots. But be not thou far off, O Jehovah, O thou my succor, haste thee to help me. And he did. We come down to the 24th verse. For he hath not despised nor abhorred the affliction of the afflicted, neither hath he hid his face from him. So the psalm starts in, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? But before it is over, he realizes he has not been forsaken. You got your Bibles, and out in the wind, I'm content to listen to the preacher. I'm not doing much turning myself, but you can, Eli. Turn to the book of Hebrews in the 5th chapter. And it says this of Jesus. Hebrews 5, verse 7. Who in the days of his flesh, having offered prayers and supplications with strong crying and tears unto him that was able to save him from death. It's not who was able to save him from dying, but who was able to save him from or out of death. Unto him who was able to save him out of death, and having been heard for his godly fear, though he was a son, and the passage continues. So he can begin the psalm quoting David, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? In the end, David was not forsaken. Jesus knew that he would not be forsaken, but he would quote the beginning words of the psalm that details the suffering that he would endure, the words that his enemies would say, and they all fulfilled that. Young people, do you think that's an accident? Do you think that's just some kind of similarity? Here is a pattern for what was going to be done 1,000 years later, and it was fulfilled. It's not something Jesus could contrive to fulfill, because it details what his enemies would do, what his enemies would say, what their actions would be. And they were explicit. And he accuses them of that when he said, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? Because that's the beginning of that psalm where David is writing so poetically about the suffering that he endured and the suffering that he knew. What occasion would this be? Can I get you to move this over? I'm standing on one leg. I'm standing. This is so much better. I'm on flat ground now. There are a couple of occasions. This could be after David had gone out to the battle where Goliath was standing a bit across the valley, screaming at them, hurling insults at them and their God. And all the soldiers saw, got up every morning, and they got in battle array, and they stood down on the hill, and they listened to Goliath curse them. And that was more than David could endure. So he took what he had. As Jeff mentioned, his shepherd's sling, the 5 smooth stone, and he slew Goliath. And Saul was fond of him after that. And he worked his way up to being Saul's commanding general for his army. But David was too successful, and the women were seeing Saul was slaying his thousands, but David his 10,000s. And Saul became jealous of David, and he sought to kill him. He pursued him. And there was occasion where he even fled into Gath and behaved as a crazy imbecile so that people would not know who he was. And that was certainly a downtime in David's life. I think, though, probably this is the time when Absalom led a coup and dethroned him. And he's out of the kingdom. He's across the Jordan, and he's dwelling in exile. You remember how that came about. David had several wives. The wife of one of David's wife, one of David's wives gave life to a daughter named Tamar. And Absalom was also that mother's son. Absalom, Tamar, and what's his name? Amnon. Okay. Thanks for the namby-pamby, we got that straight now. Amnon fell in love with his half-sister, and he had great desire for her. And so he sought to seduce her. I'm not going into all the details of the story. And she would not succumb, and he raped her. And after that, because she had not succumbed graciously to his immoral advances, then he hated her. He had her cast out and locked the door and insulted her. And you can imagine how that would feel. And Absalom, her brother, was angry about that. He made a plan so that Amnon was killed, and he was in charge of it. So Absalom killed Amnon, who had raped Tamar. Absalom flees from his father and dwells in exile, and David was in great pain, but he would not go and send and bring Absalom back. So Absalom plotted, and he created a circumstance where Joab, he had to go to David and try to see.